Hotcast One is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Spokane, presented by Delish Hamburgers. Speak Spokane is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Spokane, and at their website, speakpodcasting.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. TheGameBag.com. Have you been out to an early morning soccer game or football game and it was either wet or raining during the game? Were you afraid of taking your blanket in fear it would get muddy or wet? Go to thegamebag.com to pick up the world's best stadium bag. The Game Bag is waterproof, windproof, because of the vinyl exterior. It protects from not only the mud and rain, the lost hot dog covered in ketchup and mustard, or your favorite sports drink. The interior is a soft, medium weight fleece designed to create a greater level of warmth, comfort, and security for any outdoor activity. It's also machine washable. Go to www.thegamebag.com to get yours today. Welcome to a Hotcast One radio podcast. I am your host, the Big Lamboski, the number three hitter, Kevin Lammerding. And across from me in the home studio A, at the home location, we've got the leadoff hitter himself, the maestro of the microphone, Mr. Albert Garza. How you doing, buddy?
Good, man. How's it going?
Going great. We got the new studio somewhat set up. We got wires kind of hanging around that we got to put away.
It's better, though.
It's a lot better.
Better.
Our studio desk is a little more stable, and it's looking up. We've got the announcement of our Speak Spokane studio that we will be going to February 9th.
February 9th.
Will be our first airing of that, so please look for that. The new studio is amazing. And I cannot wait to get in there. It's totally legit. We'll be doing Speak Spokane airings of commercial reads. And we've got the studio to ourselves for an hour and a half. And be looking for those shows. They're going to be amazing, amazing shows.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear what we sound like after being edited and messed, you know, when they take our voices and match them and
edited, produced.
We can be a little louder than each other sometimes, and for them to put that all together with commercials and all that stuff, because we're really beginners at this. We've only been doing it for four months in September,
something like that. Yeah.
So we've grown a lot. Mm-hmm. But those guys have good resumes as far as radio.
The guy who showed us around has the KXLY, the 1510 AM mm-hmm. background. And he, everybody there is going to have more radio.
Yes. He had the post game show for the Zags, right?
Yes. Well, he was a part of it. I don't think he was the main talker, but I think he was the producer of that show.
Which is really cool to have that, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, for me to talk to him and you to talk to him was like, oh shoot, we're little guys here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's weird because those guys went to school for that stuff, went to school. Media. And this is podcast all over the nation. Mm-hmm. Okay. Guys like Bert Kreischer, guys like Joe Rogan, guys like, the kicker for the Colts. I can't think of his name. And I listen to him almost every day. Just drawing a blank. Anyway, the kicker for the Colts. But they didn't go to school for publication or broadcasting or anything like that. Podcasting opens up those avenues of people to get into, you know, radio in air quotes, but onto the airwaves of, you know, in a podcast, just people out there bullshitting and talking and, you know, underwater basket weaving and how to put them together. That's the great thing about a podcast. And you start talking to those radio guys who have done the work and put in the time, and you,
I don't know, I felt a little overwhelmed just talking to those guys because they have done all of the pre-work and we're just two dummies putting on a show.
So I was talking to my coworker and he made a good point to me. And he said that the cool thing about podcasts is you get to pick what you want to listen to. When you turn on 99.3, you know, radio station,
the Frog.
Yeah, you don't, you just listen to whatever they got aired. You know, they might play the same song every hour, you know, but that's just, that's the radio. And they got their commercials and that's how they make their money. And, but with podcasts, you know, if I want to listen to Joe Rogan, I'll just go to Spotify and or whatever and go pick, go listen to him.
So while you're listening to this show, go up to the top left corner, hit that follow button or the subscribe button, absolutely, either one, click that, please. That shows our people that we've got listeners and faithful followers and all that good stuff of the podcast. And then that helps kind of pay the bills. So,
yeah.
So get on there, download the show. If you aren't going to be in good internet access, download the show. It's completely free. And subscribing is free as well. So click it. And then every time we produce a show and publish it, you get notified for it.
That's awesome.
So, that's our big news is that studio. And I'm excited. We've got four or five different people that we're trying to select for that very first show. It's going to be a big show. And we might be putting too much pressure on ourselves. It just make it good. Make it sound like, you know, how we sound, and don't worry about it. Just talk and have a good conversation. But it does kind of, it's like you're getting ready for a game. You know, you've got playoffs coming up all week long. You're thinking about it. And that's kind of what this feeling is. You kind of got some butterflies.
I just want to go back to when we walked out of the studio. We had that, like, wait till we get to the road before we fist bump each other. Like, did that just happen?
Did that just happen?
Did we just, like, make a deal? Like, you know, and it was so just, like, all the way home. I'm like, I couldn't even wait to get home. I called you. I was like, Kevin, dude, what the heck just happened, man? Like, but yep. I'm excited, man. And, you know, I'm already thinking of what I'm going to wear this thing.
Well, our goals changed. I mean, our goal was to get into an actual studio. Either we built it and it was an actual studio with an actual producer. Mm-hmm. So we met that goal. Now what's next? That's where I was left thinking. And I was all smiles all the way home. And you took the video of the, you know, of the tour of the place. And I kept showing it to my daughter. I said, oh, did you see this? Did you see this? It was like, I was 12 years old. You know, first time at the high school baseball field. Ooh, we're at the, you know, that was my feeling.
Who'd you call first?
My girlfriend.
Really?
Yeah.
I call my mom. Well, my wife, obviously, that's first. I call my wife. And then I called my mom. And my mom was like, oh, I'm so proud of you. That's really cool. You guys sound good. You know, obviously, she's going to say we sound good. But, you know, mom's mom.
Mom's mom.
Yeah, that's actually a show we were trying
trying to get the schedule right and have the moms, my mom and your mom on there. Yep. And, you know, because my mom played ball, you know, she played softball, and I think she played some fast pitch, but she raised a baseball player. And your mom raised a baseball player, and I'm sure that they've got their own stories of how they saw things and you know, kind of what they expected, I guess, or foreseen as we were growing up. So it'd be interesting.
You think they have a baseball mom starter pack with a Dodge Caravan and a big old bucket of Tide?
Well, we had a brown Suburban.
Ooh.
We didn't, my mom didn't drive a caravan or a minivan. She had that long ass brown Suburban.
Throw everybody in there. We called those the Mormon haulers. But my mom had the Dodge Caravan, threw everybody in there. That was cool.
That's like the official vehicle of the baseball mom, soccer mom.
If you were prime time, if you had the auto doors.
Ooh, yeah, we didn't have none of that. We had a, I remember on the passenger side of this Suburban, it went as the door opened up. You knew that door was opening.
Well, if it means anything, but thanks moms for driving us everywhere.
What do you remember from Little League?
Oh man. You know, I remember my earliest, like, T-ball, Little League, I remember running around the bases and sliding, like,
for no reason.
Just, yeah. I would slide into home head first, and I wouldn't stop. I knew that. I knew I just wanted to hit home run. Run around the bases, you know?
You didn't have outs.
But I remember being a little step ahead of the kids my age, you know, and hitting the ball, you know, and running around. I knew I was going to get home. And that was good. But I didn't have to slide, but I did.
I think now, just from coaching my son, in T-ball, everybody hits. There's really no outs. Mm-hmm. You get into coach pitch, and it was kind of up to, you know, both coaches talked before the game. It was, do we just let everybody hit, or do we actually do three outs? Mm-hmm. The team that I had was pretty competitive, and we played another team that they were pretty competitive, you know, for that age group, mm-hmm. I guess, 10U and, or
didn't play.
no, maybe it was 9U because they didn't play last year. So it would have been 9U. So no, 10U. And yeah, let, you know, three outs, let's mm-hmm. get them to play outs. If they can do it, let's do it. But the other teams, they weren't really that good because most of your kids now, and we'll get back to our little league, but most of the kids now, if you're any good, you get put on athletic edge, hitting zone.
Yeah.
Well, it's not hitting zone club anymore. Ball. Yeah, it's club ball.
Travel.
They don't want to deal with ball, kids yeah. who don't know how to play catch. And that's your dad's fault, kids. If you don't know how to play catch and you join a baseball team and you can't play catch, that's your dad's fault.
And it's not really... Okay, listen, that he's right, but
I am 100% right.
But if dad can't play baseball, it doesn't help either. You know, maybe he can't catch, but mom probably can.
Then mom probably can. But so. I had one dad. He got mad at me because his son, or no, let me start over. He got mad at me because all we were doing was playing catch and we weren't learning how to do anything else. You have to catch a ball first before you can go out and catch fly balls, before mm-hmm. you can go, you know, play a long toss, before you can work on throwing balls to bases. You have to learn how to play catch first. I have to teach your son how to play catch, sir. That's not my fault. That's your fault. And I told him that. Mm-hmm. And then he pulled his kid out. He pulled his kid away. He left. He pulled his kid off the field. And then this is like the next practice or the practice after, and never came back.
Oh, wow.
Because this team was not up to his par. Well, I had a full team of kids whose parents didn't teach them how to play catch. We couldn't do anything other than, I mean, batting practice. I was just, you know, trying to get them the bat to hit the ball.
Yeah.
Basically, where's your bat path? And I will do my best to try to hit it. And it was that year was a tough year.
Fundamentals aren't something that you need a person should look at like a disgrace. It's fundamentals. Major leaguers go back to fundamentals. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was a coach, I had my high school team and I started off with the basics. You know, we had bunting, playing catch. I had to teach kids how to go from the stretch because they just weren't taught that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is varsity baseball. It was a small town. I pulled some kids from the hallways that didn't play baseball and I had to teach them some stuff. And one of the kids ended up going to college to be a pitcher. He threw hard. He was a quarterback. And but fundamentals, you got to go back to fundies. And if he was upset about that, shame on him. You know,
you're not going to find a guy better than me that's going to teach them those little things to move on. Because I approach Little League of getting you better to go to the next level. Not we're trying to win as all these games that we can. Because winning games in Little League means jack crap.
Yeah.
Means nothing. Getting your kid ready to go to the next level, going from Little League to Babe Ruth, maybe getting looked at to join a club team. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about. And it's not about winning games because there's no playoffs. You get done. It is about winning because you want your kids to win. But if you're not doing the right things to win, then yeah. you're not learning anything.
Yeah.
And I don't remember... And I try to, and you know, everything is better for us when we're in Little League, you know, us as players. And I don't remember having to deal with those kids that didn't know how to play the game. To me, I remember us being good. We were all stars. We all, you know, we could throw the ball around the bases. Everybody was hitting home runs. That's how I remember. But in reality, that's probably not what it was.
And, well, you know, here's another scenario. Things were different. We played a lot outside as kids. Kids aren't doing that today. Mm-mm. You know, the times are different. So, you know, you might not be wrong. You know, there you guys probably were a little bit more baseball, you know, ready, you know, so.
Well, it was the same kids that we played with that we were playing with at lunch. We were playing with before school started.
After school.
And we were playing kickball. We were playing basketball. Mm-hmm. We were playing butt ball. We were playing, you know, whatever else. Tetherball. Tetherball champion right here.
You probably were one of the back serve guys.
Oh, I could get that all the way. You didn't have a chance. Once I started serving and I got that good angle, you were not touching
short
the ball.
Short guys didn't do good in that game.
No. So that was my claim to fame. But when I was in, I originally went to school in Kremlin, Montana. So I was a big fish in a really small pond before moving to the metropolis of Clarkston, Washington, where I was not that big fish anymore. There was a lot of kids.
I'm going to go back to Kevin's interview where he says, where I can kick ball over the school buses.
I did. Just boom, baby.
That's all I could do.
I used to, so we would play on the basketball
court. That's funny,
man. I would play on the basketball court outside, and there was a hoop on the other end, so we could kick it. And sometimes I'd hit the backboard. Sometimes I'd make that kickball into the hoop itself.
All right.
So I got some stories.
Yeah.
So legendary.
So back to our where we were at Little League.
Yeah. I mean, that's where we fell in love with the game of baseball. Yeah. And, you know, that's how things are today. You know, and I kind of want to talk about this last season of how compressed that it was. But that kind of goes back to how we played. Our seasons were always so compressed. It had to start at a certain time so it could end at a certain time because the next sport was about ready to start.
Yeah.
You had to fit in that little square. And that's how we grew up.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say it was one of my earliest memories of Little League was the one of the best memories was we used to do the parade, the Little League parade in Moses Lake. They'd get all the teams because there was two sides. There was back then it was American League and they called it. And then there was the Pacific Coast League. There was one side of town. And
there was that many teams in Moses Lake.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. There was a lot of teams back then.
Wow.
And we do this parade and we were the Broncos and I played 10, 11 and 12 years old in the Broncos. And opening day, we played the Tigers. And you know who was on that team? He was a man child.
So that would be BJ Garby.
You're absolutely right.
Number 14, BJ Garby.
Yes. BJ. But he was on that team. But we had a guy named George Agmaset. And George Agmaset was up there with the BJ back then. And they both threw hard. They both hit for power. And we were playing on a slow pitch softball field. And they were hitting them out of that.
Wow.
12 years old.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, yeah, I can believe that.
300 feet.
Because you watch them on you know, Little League World Series, and those are 12-year-olds.
What are the fences? Well, two
air quotes, they're 12-year-olds.
Like 230 feet. I think we got it. We should look that up.
250.
Somewhere around there, right?
I think it's 250, 260. So
another 50 feet. But these guys were hitting some shots back then. And I remember that was when I met my buddy Angel. He played on the Tigers, and we were both little guys. And BJ threw so hard.
It's like, whew, wow. I remember we had a kid. He was a lefty. His name was Newt White. And he was unhittable.
He sounds like a pitcher.
Yeah, he was unhittable because he'd just throw the ball by you. And then eventually you catch up. It's like a guy that I went to school with, Joe Fazari.
Fazari's.
This is your daily plug of Fazari's Pizza. Get yours today. No, Joe Fazari. He was bigger than all the other kids until about seventh grade. And then he stopped. He plateaued. And then everybody else grew
above
him.
That's so funny you say that because the guy I was talking about, George Agmaset, he was the same way, man. He was like a man.
He was a man.
He was like 5'8" when we were like, he was 12 and we were little. But he's still 5'8".
He's still 5'8". Yep.
You know, it's like, hey.
Well, Joe was classic for being in the bench press. You know, we'd have the during high school because his chest, he could bulge his chest up, but his arms were so little to lock out. He only had to go
6 inches.
You know, 6 inches, and he'd just rep them out. Where me, I've got these long gargantuan arms that I got to come all the way down, and I can't lock out, so my reps weren't as good as his. But yeah, he was one of those kids that he was big when we were little, and then about seventh grade, we caught up.
So, what was your first memory of Little League? Or
mine was in we were in Montana, and when I was in elementary school, we played t-ball. I remember there being a home run fence and I could hit it out off the tee. But then I remember playing for Hayward's Muffler and Brakes. I think in my interview I said pawn shop, and it was Hayward's Muffler and Brake is what it was, just to clarify all the Karens out there. And me and my cousin got to play, but I was the rover, and I remember just running all over the field because I could run and catch the ball. I could run and, you know, field it. I was like a five-man infield for softball, and then throw everybody out at first base.
There you go.
And but I wanted to be a third baseman, so I'd get over there in the third and then just be a ball hog.
Run all over the place.
And, you know, coach is like, you got to stay there. But I remember my best memory is when we would be practicing at Northern Montana University. We were out in the, I don't know, whatever commons area. Our coach would be hitting fly balls. He wouldn't have me go out there to catch fly balls because I would catch everything. And then so he'd just have me in and shag, or else I'd be that middle cutoff.
Yeah.
And but he wouldn't let me go out there because everybody else needed to practice, but I was the only one catching the ball. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, why nobody else is catching it, coach? I might as well.
I just thought of something. Another memory that comes to mind at Little League was when I was 12, we played the Mariners. Mariners were the team. They were coached by a guy named Russ Tampion. You might know some of the Tampions. They played in Moses.
Name sounds very familiar.
They were Daystar. A Christian school. Mike Lopez played
Abraham,
there.
Abraham Jones.
Jones played there. Yep. So they were taught by a guy that was a high school coach, and he's a very fundamental coach. One of the biggest things he was known for was throwing motion. He really got that out there, and they all threw like that. They practiced. They threw the ball at the same time. They were like the good team, like really good.
The goody two shoe team.
So this is a championship game, and I think we're tied. I don't know if his base is loaded, but I'm on first base, and they bring in Bubba Valdez.
Bubba Isaac. Was a Daystar kid, huh?
No, he played for the Mariners.
Okay, gotcha.
So this is, you know, Little League. Mm-hmm. And my little brother Stevie's up to bat, bases loaded, tie ball game. I think the scenario is right. I have to get the facts, but so it had Bubba throws a ball eye level to Stevie, and Stevie tomahawks a bait winning run right there to win the game, championship game.
Awesome.
And I always remember that because once in a while Stevie will bring it up to Bubba, and Bubba's like, shake his head. Oh, yeah, that happened.
What did you wear in Little League?
This for our uniforms?
Mm-hmm.
We had the Broncos. So this is funny. Other than college, I've been in green.
I remember you telling me
I cannot get out of green.
But my question, so you had a shirt?
High school. Yeah.
Did you have a shirt or was it a jersey?
We had a jersey.
Did you wear baseball pants?
We had baseball pants.
Okay. Yeah, that wasn't us.
We had belts.
We had
stirrups.
We had shirts. And then if you could afford baseball pants, then you wore baseball pants, or else you were like me, and I wore blue jeans up until I have several pictures of me wearing blue jeans out there, and I hated it, but that's what I had was blue jeans, because they're all the other kids, the cool kids had baseball pants. But eventually I got into pants. But you must be looking for a picture.
Yep.
of Garza in his Mariners uniform.
I wouldn't say that I have something here from Little League, but Zach Fabian. One of my buddies, he always has that. Yeah, I can't find it. I'll just have to post it on. Maybe that's a little put our podcast and put our Little League pictures on.
Yeah, I know. I have a picture of our, I think it's a team picture that I know I have. I might have one of me. I might have one of me playing Little League in that pile. I got, you know, mom's clearing out the extra closet and it's got all the photos. So I have almost all of my photos. I think my mom would have to clarify that one, but I know I've got team pictures of us in Little League.
That's me when I was 19, the Heat.
Okay. Yeah. Those sleeveless. Mm-hmm. I love the sleeveless jerseys.
But yeah, that's crazy to see some of those old picks.
I remember during summer, we used to play at Holy Family Elementary School, which is the Catholic school, and it was on diagonal. So the fence was a diagonal shot, but you had a legit foul line with a foul pole, and then you had, you know, you had everything else. So when we were growing up, myself, JD Burns, maybe like a Kyle Mon, we could hit the ball out. And then the other kids couldn't yet. I mean, yet, but it took a couple years, but it became, we played on that field for, I bet, 4 years. And it was 7:30 in the morning, maybe go home for lunch, maybe. But once 5 o'clock came around, your tummy's growling and it's time to get home. Yep. But every day we'd play on that field. We lost so many balls. If it got too hot, then we go down to the pool. I mean, it was a lot like The Sandlot, the movie, mm-hmm. to where if it got too hot, we're gonna go either to the river or we're going to the pool, the city pool, which is now like a skate park or something like that.
When did you hit your first home run?
In what?
Talking over the fence, running around the bases.
Well, that would have been T-ball. If it was my very ever first home run, it would have been
like over a fence.
Yep. Yeah, we had a home run fence in T-ball.
Okay. So what about Little League? Did you hit any over the Little League fence?
When we played, so it was a Soton County youth baseball. And now it's different because now you can actually qualify for the Little League World Series. Everything has changed. When I grew up, we had our own All-Stars, we had our own champion playoffs, but it was never associated to anything else. Okay. So that was your level that, you know, you could go to. There wasn't anything after that as far as like a Little League World Series or anything like that. But we didn't have fences, but we used to hit the ball into the other fields of play. They would have to stop while we're rounding bases. So I remember that. But my first home run would have been in high school, because that would have been the first time that we actually played with on a field with, mm-hmm. with a fence.
Right on. Mine was, so I didn't hit one until I was 15. And I remember, because it was Legion ball in Moses Lake, I think it was our first game, and I was leadoff. And ball, I think it was 2-0 count. Guy pitched me a fastball inside, and I hooked it down the foul pole and hit a home run down the foul line. Just hooked it, you know, and I didn't think anything. I just ran the bases, and they were doing that, waving their hands in there, home run, and I'm like, oh, cool, you know?
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I always had that. Like, I always hit the warning track and the fence, but never got one out.
What field?
Larson.
It was Larson.
Larson.
Okay.
Fields.
Okay.
And this is, they moved it back after 99. And so it went from 320 to 330 down the line. But I hit a home run, and I was like, cool. You know, like a hit home run. I think I went 3-for-4 that game. Well, it was a doubleheader. And between games, you're getting ready, you eat some snacks, you know, whatever. You talk to your friends. And my friend Eloy Sanchez and Michael, their brothers, they're like, hey, you hit a home run that game? I'm like, yeah, hit home run, man. That's cool. And they're like, hit another one. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll hit one right now. You know, I was leadoff. Come up the bat, first pitch, I hit one in the alley, left field, left center alley. And there's a tree there behind fence. You know, it's a good 30-foot tree. And I hit it, it's line drive, got out in a hurry, and I hit another home run. And I hit this one good. Like, it was.
when you got back to the dugout, were you just all grins?
Oh, dude, I was cheek to cheek, you know, blush, Mexican blushing. You know, I'm a brown boy and I'm blushing, man. I was on top of the world. And I remember hitting this ball. It was a poke, man. That's a deep, it was 375 there. You know,
oh,
that's a good alley there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Sounds like it.
And I hit the tree and it, that was my home run. I didn't think I was ever going to
hit. How many did you hit that year then? So that's two.
That's what I'm getting to. So we were playing at Skagit County in a tournament the next weekend, that coming up weekend. And we had a coach, I think his name was Coach Forrest, and he coached our Legion team. I rode with him down there. And as we're going to the road, the fields, I go, you know, I don't think I'll ever hit another home run. That's so awesome. He's like, you know what? You're going to hit plenty. As long as you keep on playing this game, you're going to hit plenty. And I ended up hitting 14 home runs that summer.
Wow. Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. I mean,
and you were how old?
I was 16, 15 or 16.
Welcome back. Season 2 of the Hotcast 1 Radio Podcast. Albert and Lambo sitting here talking baseball from our youth, just kind of sharing stories back and forth. And Albert was talking about hitting a home run and then the next game, first pitch, hitting another home run. And then going on to tell us that he hit 14 that year. But you were saying off air, you had one home run that was kind of special from that year.
So, yeah, that was we were playing at Skagit County, and in I remember, so the fence is tall. It was like one of those. So the fence guarded this historical house at these. It's a, I don't know what they call it, but it was a historical house that they tried keeping from balls hitting. Well, I got the ball up and over this thing. And hit that thing pretty far, I guess. And ended up peppering that fence a couple of times. But that weekend, I hit 3 home runs.
And so, this was where?
In Skagit County.
Skagit County Field.
Yeah, at the fairgrounds.
At the fairgrounds.
Yeah, the fairgrounds there. I don't know what they called it, but I remember the field. It was a pretty cool field. But yeah, that was pretty cool. That was special.
Not as cool as your first home run you hit in college.
No. No, not even close.
No, and we talked about that in your podcast, mm-hmm. episode number 1.
But if you want a refresher.
Season 1. And let's refresh it. Let's tell the story, because that's a pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that one. It was a pinch hit grand slam. You know, the game was tied, and there was a runner first. I think first and second, the guy in front of me got walked. Base was loaded, and the coach looked at me and just pointed out the field, like, just need a deep fly ball. It's all we needed, you know, and came in, and I think it was 2-0 count, belt high, popped that thing over the palm trees, man. And
I did, you know it right away?
I know I hit it good. I knew I hit it really good, but my first reaction was get going. I don't know why I was thinking get going, because I knew that I hit a fly ball. But the adrenaline and everything. And as I'm rounding first base, I looked at the umpire and he waved his hands, threw the hand motion up, and I tripped over first base, and I didn't fall, but I was like that. And I'm just, man, that was it. I was like, wow, did I just hit a walk off?
Did you touch all the bases?
Touched all the bases.
Make sure you touched all the bases.
I touched all the bases. And that was when I learned in college, you take off your helmet when you touch home, because they beat the living hell out of me. Well, actually, I didn't take it off until like my third home run that year. I think I hit like, I don't remember how many hit, like I hit a few, but I just remember, yeah, that was a cool moment. Yeah. Any special moments for you can think of?
Well, I have the one that we talked about in my podcast, and then
wire
Coach Hager over the wire. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked to Coach Hager about that. Orlando confirmed that. So I've got that one, but my very first home run at the University of Jamestown, It was a 3-0 pitch. We were down in Kansas City, and I swung 3-0 and just crushed this ball. And I round third base, and Coach Hager says, "Don't ever swing 3-0 again." And in my mind, I'm going, "Why?" But I just hit it out, Coach.
You know, that's kind of one of those things where I'm not always 100% on, you know, you're going to give me something, I'm going to take it.
It depends on who the hitter is.
It does.
And you need to be, if you're in the lower half of the order and you're swinging a hot stick, swing away 3-0. They're going to give you a pitch, but it needs to be in one spot. Mm-hmm. And if it's not in that spot, you need to have some self-discipline and do not swing. But if you're not, if you're a guy that can drive the ball out, and it, you know, again, it kind of depends on the field. Yep. Or the, you know, the game situation, swing away. If, you know, I'm conservative in that aspect, but then I'm like, no, go get it. Go eat, big dog.
If it's the Hawks and we're 3-0, and you're giving me a fastball,
I'm hacking.
Yep.
I'm hacking. I'm thinking
the same thing. I'm like, man, just give me something.
Yeah. I mean, I'm already coming out of my boots, and I'm sitting here in a podcast.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. That's kind of one of those. That's one of those unwritten rules we talked about, you know.
So, well, that goes back to Major League season this year. Mm-hmm. Fernando Tatis Jr. swinging 3-0. Hits a grand slam. Mm-hmm. And it puts him up 7 runs, or it put him up 11 runs. They were already up 11. 7.
Yep.
And then the Rangers came back. So that just shows that, yeah, you guys made all this fuss that he swung 3-0. But then you guys scored 10 runs. I think they lost by one.
No, they won by only one. They won by still one. Won, but only by one.
The Padres won.
Yes.
By one. Yep. So, yeah, they still won by one.
If he didn't hit that home run, they would have lost.
Mm-hmm. So,
and who knows what the next pitch would have been.
Yeah.
You know, that the pitcher threw that ball thinking it was a no-brainer. He's going to let it go, maybe. And Tatis said, nuh-uh, I'm going to hit this and get ahead. He won the ball game.
In that one pitch,
mm-hmm.
Three things were learned there. Pitchers, don't take your pitches for granted that he's not going to swing. Mm-hmm. Make your pitches count. Doesn't matter the count. Doesn't matter where you're at in the game. Doesn't matter the score. Every pitch matters. Number two, always be aggressive. And number three, if you feel disrespected that a guy just swung 3-0 and they're already up, that should light a fire under your ass to now let's score some runs. And let's go back and beat them.
It probably did, because they came back. Mm-hmm. They were really close to coming back. And, you know, and there was a lot of people upset about that, but I was not
one of those guys. Swing again.
So what about, we've reached college. And, you know, that was it for me. But as far as memorable things, you know, there's a lot of things. I can go back to Little League. When I was 12, we were in the championship, and the winner went to San Bernardino. And we had to double dip the team. We won the first game. The second game got rained out on a Sunday. So my family's ran out of hotels. There was nothing, no hotels. We should have stayed there, but we drove back to Moses Lake, and then came back then I think that next day or the next weekend or something. It was a weird thing. It was kind of fuzzy, and it was still raining over there, and it was in Kirkland. And championship game, this is make or break, you know. And I remember probably the worst things that ever happened to me. Ball skipped on the wet grass, because we weren't used to that. Skipped, and it went through my legs.
Mm.
And they scored a couple runs and just started the thing. And
it didn't hop. It was that turf skip.
No, it was grass, but it just went.
But it
just took off.
Yeah.
And I remember that. And it kind of, that wasn't the thing that started. There was a couple of things that led to that. And I remember going, I think that team ended up doing well in the World Series too. Hmm. And that hit me pretty hard. We all, you know, we were 12. We cried because we had a good team.
I wish we had that option of going to play, you know, in a college World Series type environment. Mm-hmm. You know, you put your all-star team together. We had it in Babe Ruth. Both years we had our all-star team. We'd go down to Prosser, stay with a host family. I think we won one, lost two, and we were out. Mm-hmm. I think both years. And in Little League, we just didn't have that. We played in our championship. I think we had an all-star game. They split the 8 or the 10 teams in half. And then, you know, you played in your all-star game, and then that was it. Get ready for Little League football.
So what's your worst memory in baseball?
My worst memory was...
Try not to cry.
my worst memory was being done playing. We were in regionals, and we were playing St. Scholastica out of Minnesota. I think they're St. Paul. And we were down early. I think it was like 15-2. And we had battled back. I think it was 15-10 at one point. 15-11, somewhere in there. Wow. And it was... I was great the whole game, even though we were down. Our team was good enough to battle, and we had enough arms to keep us in the game. They took advantage of scoring big chunks of runs in one inning, and they just hit the ball, and we battled back. So yes, at the end of the game was emotional, but there was some pride there that this team didn't give up. I knew we were done playing. And that might have been the worst moment, but you know, personally, you know, you fail 7 out of 10 times in baseball. I don't think you can find a worse moment because you have so many. You know, I overthrow first base on a pickoff, miss a ball tagging somebody at home. You know, I don't know. There's too many. Baseball's a game of failures, and you got to overcome the failures to be successful. And I don't know if I can narrow it down to one, but that I know that that was my worst feeling was being done. Hmm. How about you?
Mine was freshman year of college. So I started off the season really good, obviously, with the walk-off. But I ended the season with one of the worst things ever. I mean, I had nightmares about this. It was like the 7th or 8th inning and fly ball, 2 outs, runner on 1st and 2nd.
You told me this story. Yeah,
and I'm coming to the ball, and I knew there was 2 outs, but the center fielder says tagging, so I changed from can of corn to coming through the ball real quick, you know, like last second, coming through the ball to throw out the guy at 2nd or 3rd, and it hit the heel of my glove and dropped, and that started, we were up like 2 runs, and that started their inning. They ended up coming up one, you know, and the next play was a ground ball through to me, and I hit my cut, and that scored a run. Now there's runner, bases loaded still. Then I think a double play, then they got the out, but they were up, I want to say they were up one. And I remember coming to the 9th inning, and I was up to bat, and I felt like shit already still, and I think the coach read that. And they put in a guy for me, but I feel like I would have been a better choice to hit than the guy they put in, but that's just me. But for the longest time, the guy that was pitching, he probably still hates me because of it. You know, me and him didn't see eye to eye the whole at all. Mm-hmm. And before that happened, so this just made it worse, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And but yeah, man, that was a really bad feeling because I single-handedly lost the game. You know, and this is in regionals. You know, we're getting ready to go to the JC College World Series, and that ruined it right there.
Well, you know now that one play doesn't win or lose a game. There's 9 innings.
Yeah.
There's 9 players. There's 27 outs.
Yep.
And one play doesn't. Yes, one play affected that inning, but one play doesn't affect the entire game.
It was hard. Mm-hmm. Still is. I'm 38 years old. This is almost 20 years ago and still kind of hits me a little bit. And so on that, I went to Portland last year, and I got a hold of one of my buddies, Greg Cusick, and he was probably the most pure hitter I've ever met in the game. The guy just hit. He was a good hitter. He knew everything counts. He just was a good player. And he's sick right now. he's sick, and I had made it a point to see him, and I think I showed you the pictures. We got to play catch, you know, I haven't seen him in years, and we played catch, and he had a cane, and we played some catch together, and that was cool. But the first thing, he grabs the ball and gets ready to throw, and he goes, "Don't drop it." And we giggled a little bit, and he's like, you know, if anybody ever fucking gives you shit about that, teammates are the only ones that can say anything about that, not anybody else, you know. And then I was like, he goes, "Because I love you, bro." And I was like, "That's, you know, at least he knows the game."
Yep.
Sorry for the cuss words.
we had mistakes in that regional run. We had some errors. Shortstop gets a ground ball. He goes to turn two, just looks up, ball goes under the glove. You know, that leads. It just continues an inning. And I remember, no, that was against Mayville. Greg Ross, we did a podcast with him. The best first baseman I have ever played with. Mm-hmm. And probably excluding major leaguers. And we've watched a lot of games here in Spokane at Avista Stadium, Spokane Indians. He's better than those guys. He is a better first baseman than the guys who are playing for the Spokane Indians. And he had one ball that was hit. It was against Mayville, and we lost. It was the championship game, and it was a runner at first base. The guy pushes off to go to second. Ground ball is hit. The ball hits that footprint where, like, I don't know, the heel pushed off, or the ball of your foot, you know, the cleat pushes off. So there was a little indent there. That ball hits, and it goes straight up in the air. Not any fault of his own. I know, baseball gods. Yeah, that was just luck on their side. And I know he was kind of down on himself for that, saying he should have got it, should have attacked it. That ball was smoke, bro. there's no way. I mean,
it's a funny game, you know. And sometimes the ball goes in your glove. I mean, we had our championship game this last year at the Hawks. A funny play.
Yep.
Little ball with eyes. Ball
up the middle,
and it. You know, they're looking at the ball like, "Hey, can of corn, just get the out, we win." But it hit the bag and bounced away with them. We scored, we won.
Yep.
Weird.
Yep.
You know,
just a ground ball with eyes.
What if it didn't hit the bag? It's in his glove. Or what if Lance snags it up the middle?
There's then double play.
Double play. Yep. You know, but we scored, and that was it. Got it on video. Baseball is such a funny sport. Like, going back to all the stuff that happened in the bad times, there is more good times than there are the bad, and they outweigh them by far.
Yep.
And the kids that are playing, if you fail once in a while, hey man, I'm telling you right now, it's things good are going to happen too. Just keep on going.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you've got to learn, and that's what separates good players from average players is knowing that you are going to fail. And moving past them.
Yeah.
Learn from your mistake. Make yourself better. Move past them. Go to the next play. Because you know, you make an error in the field, that next ground ball is coming right back at you. And that the baseball gods are trying to get it out of your system. Yep. Make the next play. Throw them out. Don't let it build, because it will build.
I wish I would have had a chance to see if I can make up for it up to bat when I was in college. You know.
Yep. Yep, because you were telling me that story, and I know what you're thinking.
Yeah,
because I know how I would have been. I want to make up for that error that I had. Let me swing the stick.
The guy that hit for me, I'm not going to say names, but he struck out, and I never struck out. You know, I did, but you know, chances are I was going to get some wood on.
Was it just a gut feeling from the coach?
I think so, and I haven't talked to him in a while. You know, but it'd be nice to hear his point of what he was thinking. You know, maybe
he might have thought you were going to be way over aggressive,
maybe nervous,
try to do too much.
Yeah. And that's smart. The guy that they put in, he had amazing power, and maybe he thought he was going to win it with one swing, you know, and he could have, you know, but it didn't. So,
and that's the funny part about baseball.
Yep. Yep. But yeah, so baseball. Funny. Baseball. So what's gonna happen with the big leagues this year? What do you think?
Well, still the talk, and I'm glad you brought that up, because one question I want to ask you, and we might have talked about it, I don't remember if it was on a podcast or if it was just us shooting the breeze, the universal DH that was in last year. Another thing they were talking about was the runner at second base and extra base in extra innings. I want to know what your thought is on the universal DH for both leagues.
Here's my thing. I really miss watching pitchers hit in the World Series that didn't get a hit during the season. Mm-hmm. That was a part of the game where I was like expecting it, but I didn't really remember that it was they had switched that. So I think it helps with injuries, especially in a short season, you know, that they had last year. And I just think that, man, that's a tough one, because both leagues have their ways, you know, had their ways. Now it's the same for both sides. And it should have been that from the beginning. It shouldn't have been one side used the pitchers hit and one side the pitchers didn't, you know, had a DH. So
I see it. I see it as, now there are pitchers that hit. You take Tom Glavine. You take, you know, John Smoltz could hit. Mm-hmm. Trying to think, Rick Ankiel for the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. He was a pitcher turned center fielder, but he could always hit. I think he played for University of Tennessee, and he played both ways.
Pettit. He can hit.
Pettit could hit. There are guys, pitchers, that can hit because they played, you know, other positions while they were in college. So, I mean, they were pitchers, but they were hitters. So in those select instances, it takes away from them. It takes away from that purity of the game of having the pitchers pitch or pitchers hit. But there are so many guys who look absolutely terrible swinging a bat.
Yeah.
The one argument that keeps coming up in every conversation I have with this, you wouldn't have an Edgar Martinez. You wouldn't have a David Ortiz. You wouldn't have a Harold Reynolds or a Harold Baines, who was a DH. The professional hitters. Mm-hmm. You would, because Edgar played third base and he was a hell of a third baseman, but he kept getting hurt playing third base. And it would have taken him out of the game. We never would have had Griffey rounding second base, scoring the run against the Yankees in the Kingdome if Edgar Martinez doesn't hit the ball down the line. I think having the DH in both leagues helps the league. But yet in those instances, it, you know, you take away from the pitcher hitting that can actually produce and hit. And I don't know if there's a right answer, but I don't know if there's a wrong answer with that either.
So do you think that a DH professional hitter, if that's all he has to do, does he, in between innings, is he staying ready? Like, yep. in the
goes clubhouse, down to the tunnel.
Is he on a tee? Is he staying prepared that way?
Yep.
Is that fair? Is that why Edgar hit so well? Is that why Big Poppy hit so well? Because that's all they had to concentrate on?
Maybe.
You think about that, you know, because, I mean.
But you got to think, both DHs are doing the same thing on both sides. So, yes, towards the game, it is fair because both teams are doing it. Their DH is going to go down there to do T-works, a little soft toss, just to stay loose. The other players are going to go out in the field. They're going to, and actually it's probably better. It's probably worse being a DH because that is all that you're thinking about. You're thinking about the last at bat. You're thinking about, you know, the next at bat. When you're a player out in the field, now you're focused on defense. You get away. You remove yourself from that last at bat. You remove yourself from your next at bat. What am I going to do? What am I going to see? You know, if the pitcher does this, and now you're overthinking.
So that's probably why you don't see too many teams stick with one guy like they did Poppy, you know, and Edgar. They usually mixed in, you know, the guy. If he's not playing that game, if he didn't start that game as a catcher, but he still hit, that's probably
or the platoon outfielder who you want to get that fourth guy in, mm-hmm. number one for reps, but you might have a lefty thrown and he's a right-handed hitter. So you have that guy that's in there, but that other outfielder might be hot right now. Mm-hmm. So you put him at DH.
Yeah.
Give the other DH a day off or, you know, whatever. You can rotate around like that, but you keep that hot guy in the lineup.
You know, midsummer, it's getting hot. You're maybe in, you know, Florida and Bryce Harper needs a break, but you still want him to get at bat. You throw a guy in there and put Bryce at DH. Well,
that's why people show up. Yeah. They want to see Bryce hit the ball.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I still that was my question is why, you know, are those guys better now because that's all they get to do. But at the same time, they have to be mentally able to fail and come back and do it mm-hmm. again every day, every other day playing in the bigs, you know, so. Yeah, that's tough. It'd be nice to know, you know, hear it from somebody that's maybe had that role. You know, that would have been a good question for Repco, you know.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he's had the DH before.
Trying to get both leagues. I know it's a hot topic right now for this next season. They are going to play a full season. I believe training camp will be shortened a little bit, but that is the hot topic.
I noticed more fans are attending stuff in the, you know, mm-hmm. boxing and UFC. It's little by little probably just going to open back up. That's my guess. You know, I don't want to get into politics, but it'd be good to see baseball come back and pro sports come back because – you know, in America, that's what we do, man. We on Sunday,
baseball
we
watch is football. America's sport.
Yep, America's pastime, man. And there's nothing like it. You know, one thing, even if you're not a baseball fan, take your kid to a baseball game so you can experience that. Get them a bag of popcorn or some Cracker Jacks and a hot dog and a soda.
Take your glove.
Try to get an autograph. You know, those guys out there love getting autographs. You know, they do it for the kids because they're the future.
Yep.
So that'd be my, you know, like, hey, man, get your kids out there. If you can't get them to a big league game, there's probably a minor league field near you or a high school, college, anything.
Yeah, the minor leagues did a restructuring this year. Our Boise Hawks, mm-hmm. or I guess our Spokane Hawks, you know, the big league team mm-hmm. is they're no longer a single A team. So we won't be able to show up with our uniforms to the Vista to watch the Boise Hawks play the Spokane Indians because they're not in that league anymore. But now Spokane is a affiliate of
who did they go to? I don't
remember. I think it was Colorado because that's who the Boise Hawks were. They were a Colorado.
We might have to change our name.
So,
man.
Well, they're going to keep the Spokane Indians
and the Boise Hawks.
Yeah, but now the Boise Hawks are with the.
Is it Arizona?
No, are they an independent?
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, they're not affiliated.
I have a chance.
Yep, there you go. I was waiting for the open trout. I hit 800 in Arizona.
Oh, that's funny.
I can DH.
Just got straight hitting, man.
Straight hitting. I'm down. I'll bullpen catch too.
Yeah.
Just run down. Oh, I'm up. I'm third up. I gotta go. Deuces. But I hit 800 in Arizona. Boise Hawks. My name's Kevin Lamberding.
Did you ever sign autographs when you were in college or anything?
Mm-hmm. Kids yeah, we had up? Little kids come up. I remember in high school, we had pinstripes, black. We looked like the Chicago White Sox. So the kids would get out of elementary school as we're getting ready on the practice field, taking batting practice and getting mm-hmm. ready to play. So they'd come out and they thought we were the White Sox. So we would sign autographs doing that. But no, in college, we'd get the little kids that come up, or they'd run down a home run ball and want it signed and stuff. It was always very humbling. It's pretty
nice.
Cool.
It's nice, you know, because they see you, you're a big guy to them, you know, and they look at us, you know, like, hey, and who knows, maybe that kid remembers that and he's playing ball right now, or, you know, you never know. It could be a professional baseball player right now. And I don't know.
And I always took it as, as far as the game goes, I'm a nobody. I wasn't, you know, I'm just here to play ball. But if that kid thought that I was special enough to ask for an autograph, and it puts a smile on his face, and he's always going to remember that ball, then
makes you feel good too.
I'm going to sign every single one. Or I'll even now, you know, I'll see a kid watching. He's just watching and itching for something, and I'll take a brand new pearl and take it over there and says, "Hey, son, do you want a ball?"
Yeah.
And the face just lights up when that kid has that ball in his hand, and now he gets to show, mom, he gave me a ball. He gave me a ball.
Just wanted to give a huge shout out to Nomad Pro Customs. Nomad Custom Gloves is a U.S. Marine owned and ran glove company. They specialize in professional grade custom gloves, anywhere from Japanese steer hide, Japanese kip, to U.S. kip. Their goal is to bring you, the customer, the best leather possible at a great price. Check them out on Facebook at Nomad Pro Customs, or talk to myself or Albert, and we will get you lined up with an amazing custom glove.
So I wanted to talk, we were talking about autographs and kind of, you know, in college and stuff. Now, what about giving back to kids, and you see a kid that's maybe in a batting cage? I've had guys, you know, dads in Moses Lake or wherever here in Spokane said, hey, can you work with my kid? I'll pay you. And I always say, no, baseball's given me so much. And I didn't have nobody paid for me to learn anything. I didn't go to camps. I didn't go anything like that. So why would I charge anybody? So I was kind of like, when somebody asks me for anything, I'll make a time. I'll go to the batting cages with them, work for them for however long they need me, you know, maybe the forever. But, you know, if anybody ever needs anything, any help with hitting, it's kind of my thing. Defense or whatever I can give, just reach out.
I've done special instructions. I've charged. My time is valuable. But I've done special, you know, special instruction. And I had one dad, going back to when I was telling you that kids didn't know how to play catch. Mm-hmm. I had one dad pay me, and I told him, I'll just play catch with your son. I said, this is something that you should be doing. And he was watching. He was like damn near taking notes to play catch. I mean, it blew my mind. But he didn't grow up in baseball, but his son loved the game. Mm-hmm. He would always turn the TV on to watch a ball game. I'll play catch with your son. And he's like, here's $20. I'm like,
no,
I would just play catch with him after practice. Or actually, no, I take that back. This was the year after I coached that team. So I didn't even have this kid, but the dad remembered, called me up, says, hey, play catch with my son. I'll pay you. So you're not going to pay me. I'll play catch with your son. Mm-hmm. And then he handed me $20. But it was a unique situation that this dad was, I don't think he wanted to fail his son. And that's kind of what I hang my hat on, was he didn't want to look childish, you know, not in the bad way. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to look like an infant, I guess, in baseball knowledge, to play catch with his son. He wanted his son to learn the right way. And then, I mean, then, but where do you go from that? You have to learn yourself. It blew my mind that.
If you've seen a dad like that and he wants to, you know, he says, well, I can't, I don't know, you know, maybe he doesn't have good throwing motion, no aim. Maybe you teach him how to do quick toss, you know, close up, quick toss.
I always just pull out the towel.
Yeah.
Pull out the towel, mm-hmm. extend out. You want to be able to hit the chair in front of you. basically is the towel drill.
Yeah. Yep.
But you've got to keep your arm up, and then you've got to damn near whip it to get it to the chair. And if you don't hit the chair, you're throwing wrong.
Yeah. That's a good drill. I mean, do that. All pros do that still, you know, to get there, to make sure they're following through. But yeah. So what's next, man?
I think the next one was the runner at second base in extra innings. Or is it you play the 10th straight up, and then the 11th inning is runner at second base, kind of like a Kansas City tiebreaker?
I don't know if that's...
Because they did that last season in the 60-game season of 2020.
In the World Series, though? You know, I don't think that that's something you would do in a close game. I think you play out as much as you can, and the winner takes it, you know?
I don't know if it was... No, this was the entire season. This wasn't for just for playoffs, but it's on the agenda to talk about for this upcoming season of runner at second base. My vote is no. It takes away from the purity of the game. It takes away from you having to earn it.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of things go into play in this conversation. You lose audience. You know, you can only have so many people watching the game and trying to keep your audience interested. You know, you lose fans. I mean, there's all sorts of excuses, but I think that extra inning games now tests your team more than anything. Mm-hmm. So I don't agree with the Kansas City tiebreaker in Major League Baseball.
Me neither. And as far as that goes, okay, do you use that for Little League to speed the game up? Do you use it for slow pitch to speed the game up? Yeah.
Yes.
You know, there's in a tournament for girls fast pitch when you got 100 teams out there? Yes. Do you use it for Major League paid players? People are in the stands already spending their money. No, you play the game the way it's supposed to be played.
Yep.
And that's it.
And I see it in Little League. I see it in Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
Maybe Legion. And that's.
You don't take it into a playoff situation, though.
Yeah. Never. The reason why you do that is because in Little League, in Babe Ruth, in Legion, question mark, I guess, is to save arms.
You run out of pitching.
You run out of pitching, and you don't want guys out there throwing longer than they need to, and you're trying to save arms of your youth.
So it does kind of, thinking about it right now, in last year's season, pitchers didn't have time to prepare like they normally would have.
Correct.
So are they were they thinking about the pitchers here? Were they thinking, okay, these guys don't have the longevity that they normally would, but these guys are professionals. They don't stop working. They get home in the summer or the winters, and they work all, you know, most of them will keep on working. Mm-hmm. And their arms, they're playing catch still. They're still playing. A lot of them are trying to get in better shape because that's the only opportunity they have.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, how many players do you follow on Instagram or on Facebook that, you know, Nelson Cruz is one. He'll go down. He's got his gym set up just for him, going through throwing motions, going through, you know, his core training. He goes outside and he does long toss. I mean, he's always working.
He's a freak. He's what, 41 now?
He might be.
I think he's 41.
41, 42.
Because I think last year they were talking about.
Sorry if we've overdated you, Nelson.
I think he was the first player over 40 to go 4-for-4 with four extra bases, something like that. Hmm. Like you said, a record last year. I was listening to what's his name on the ESPN radio, and they were talking about why that didn't get out as a story, because there was players getting COVID and they had to talk about that, and they were like, it sucked.
Yep.
It sucks that we can't talk about a guy that's 41 setting a record. You know, that's a freak.
Yeah. Still dropping bombs.
Big ones too.
Yep.
And hitting well. So yeah, man. Nelson Cruz, man, good for you. But I'm probably the worst, though, for a baseball guy. I'm probably the worst at knowing the players, knowing the, you know, what's going on within the leagues and stuff like that.
Should we call my son down to brief you?
Diego and Franyan. Yeah.
My son.
That boy loves baseball.
Yes, he does. Because he'll send me text messages.
Did you see that?
Yeah, throughout the day. Well, and then once the NBA draft was going on, because he's a Lakers fan, he was sending me, "Oh, Lakers drafted this guy. Lakers drafted this guy."
Who's that?
And I'm like, I have no clue, son. I don't follow NBA at all. Fan. Yeah,
you know, he's the type of kid. I think that he reminds me of kids our age when we were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
He'll play every sport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one day he might be golfing, he might be playing tennis. You know, if it's competitive, he's going to play it.
Yeah.
And that boy, I love him.
And that's, I know that's how I was. It didn't matter what sport it was. I was giving you everything I had.
Yeah.
Except for soccer. I was a goalie. I'm not running.
Nope.
So,
but, yeah, man, this is going to be, I hope that we get back to normal.
Yeah.
I'd like to see things.
We need to be able to go buy overpriced beer. We need to go be able to take scorebook while we're watching a ball game at the field. You know, the attempt to try to catch a foul ball, which I have never done in my life. I'm still 0 for foul ball catch. We need that. We need that as a people, as a society, as a fandom, as getting around other people in your community, I guess, just socializing and enjoying a game that you love with other people who love the game as well. And we need that right now so badly.
You've never caught enough. The only time I've ever caught a ball is me and Angel Garza went to a Portland game when they had a minor league team. And that field is cool, man. It's like in the middle of the city in like this hole.
Is that the Salem Kaiser,
the field?
Yep.
I don't know what it was
or
called.
Is that Portland?
It was Portland. It was Portland's field downtown in the city. And they don't have a team anymore, or if they do, it's new.
So it's not a minor league affiliate.
It was a minor league affiliate. Okay. Back then. This is 10 years ago, and we went
it,
to this.
It might have been the Salem Kaiser.
No.
Team, the Rockies.
Nope. I'm going to look it up.
Because we went to, when we played summer ball over there in Portland, we would go to those Salem Kaiser games. Because Salem's right outside of Portland.
No, it was, they do have a team now. It's the Pickles.
The Portland Pickles.
The Portland Pickles. And before that was...
Should we change the Hawks name to the Pickles?
That'd be awesome.
We can keep the green.
Oh man, that's funny. So but anyways, when me and Angel were sitting there, the first baseman came in and they threw me up a ball. Right? And when I did that, when I caught the ball and I was kind of like, "Oh, cool. I got a ball." Been a while that's never happened to me. But this kid came down like I was on the by the stairs, this kid came down and he looked at me like, oh man,
I lost out.
And I looked at him. Man. I looked at him. I'm like, man, this kid didn't get the ball. This could ruin this kid. And I said, hey. He looked at me and he's already walking back up. He was almost to where the walkways were, in the tunnel, and you know, because they were running all over the place. I went like that, threw him up the ball, and. And my buddy Angel's like, dude, good job, man. Because, you know.
Was he excited?
The kid was like, thank you. Dad was like, hey, man, thanks. You know, he bought us a beer or something like that. It was cool. You know, and at that point, I would already been
done playing baseball. At that point in your life.
You know, I've met my guys. I've met guys like Tony Gwynn, Hall of Famer. You know, I've guys that are known. Just the baseball. This guy handed me a ball. It was cool.
What was Tony Gwynn like?
Tony Gwynn, my Tony Gwynn story, we were playing USABF World Series San Diego, and we were taking batting practice at his stadium, Tony Gwynn Stadium. He drove around a Rolls Royce golf cart. Pretty sweet, right?
Pretty sweet.
And we're in the cage, and I think I was getting ready to go in the cage, and he comes in, he walks in and checking us out. Why wouldn't he? He coaches a college baseball team. He's like, well, maybe I'll find some talent. Maybe. I don't know. But my coach has met him before.
No, Drew he Brooks, coached at
San Diego State. Yes.
Yeah.
So he, I don't know what happened, but one of the guys was in there and he goes, no. That's not how you take batting practice. And we're like, oh, what? And he grabs the bat. He's, no, you start from this side. You start oppo. And he get the kills, throw me the ball, you know. And he, who knows when the last time this guy took me a batting practice, maybe that morning. So he grabs the bat and he just starts hitting.
Did you know who it was?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, dude. I mean, okay. I was 19.
Okay.
You know, so, and he gets the bat and he grabs one of the guy's bats and he looks at it. All right, cool. And he hits oppo. And then he goes, okay, I'm going to hit gap, left center gap. It's like three there. Middle, boom, boom, you know, right center gap, pull. And then he had some like hula hoops up. He goes, watch, I'm going to hit those hula hoops. I'm like, he just called his hula hoop shot. Yeah, but there's a picture with us. And, you know, we took our team pick with the scoreboard in Tony Gwynn Stadium in the background.
Okay.
He's in the picture with us.
Okay. And, awesome.
But yeah, I mean, that was cool.
I'd love to be in a conversation with Tony Gwynn and Ted Williams.
That's another memorable home run I hit. It was in that stadium. It was a bomb. I mean, this is the USAB World Series. I think I hit it against LA.
Okay.
And guys were throwing like 90 something. And I got one about chest high and, you know, chest high and a metal bat, 90. It's going to go somewhere.
Yep.
So.
Oh, those were the days of aluminum bats.
Yeah. I want to say it was the Portland Beavers, by the way, that we went
Portland,
to.
Portland Beavers.
Yeah. Hmm. So, yep, it was the Portland Beavers.
Okay.
So, and it was the All-Star game. It was an All-Star game that we went to. I'm kind of jumping back right now. Mm-hmm. We talk about Tony Gwynn and there, but he was awesome. But back to the Portland story. I don't know where this is leading now.
You lost it. We started talking about Tony Gwynn and the story changed.
Tony Gwynn was awesome. And rest in peace for a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
You know,
I enjoyed, so back in my day, we would check out VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Carlton Fisk had a catching tape.
Be Kind Rewind.
Be Kind Rewind. Don't want those Blockbuster fines. Mm-mm. But I would watch the hitting tapes of Tony Gwynn, and I believe Carl Yastrzemski was one of the other ones, but that one, don't quote me on that one, but I'd watch Tony Gwynn.
Wow.
And he was, his swing was just so smooth. It was like Will Clark's.
Yeah.
Just smooth, and it was from the left side. So trying to translate that to the right side, you know, it's tough to do. Lefties have
watching lefties swing as a righty is actually good for you because you're mirroring them,
trying to
mirror them, but you can, mm-hmm, because it's, you know, you're, it's a mirror.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty awesome. We gotta look for that, one of those videos on eBay.
Do you have a VCR at home? how are we watching it?
Maybe we should just go to Goodwill and try to find one.
Go to Goodwill. Probably like, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, right. You know what I used to have? And I had a book that I used to read, a hitting book. And my dad worked at a printing shop. It was called A&H Printer, where my dad worked. And it was a book by Tim Cooper, Jason Cooper's dad.
Jason Cooper of the Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
Chicago Cubs, I think now. I think he was.
Well, that's who he was drafted by, Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay. And then
now and he's a scout with the Cubs now, right?
The Cubs, yeah.
Speaking of the Cubs.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but his dad had wrote a book on hitting, and I remember read that book forever, I think all the way through high school, and I remember showing Jason, he's like, yeah, I got that book, you know, and his dad would come talk to us about hitting, because he played pro ball. It was Jason's stepfather.
Okay.
And, yeah, I remember that book. It was like a pink paper book with the rings. I don't know if that's what went out to sell. So
this was like a handwritten?
It was printed. It was printed. I mean, this, they printed it out. It looked
I was thinking like a notepad that he just wrote this book in.
Write that down. I want to look for that book. Maybe we should try to look for it. That'd be cool.
What am I writing?
Tim Cooper's hitting book.
Tim Cooper hitting
book. Yeah, it'd be cool to find one just to see.
But what was in the book? What made it special?
It talked about, you know, counts, situations, the path, hitting path, you know, the stuff like letting the ball get deep, really basic, but broke down. I mean, you had to in a book to talk about the swing and that's in your hitting situation has to be broke down because it's not just saying it to you,
mm-hmm.
you're word for wording this, and that's tough. But as a kid, it was legible, right? Am I thinking
legible
for me?
It was readable or translatable.
For me as a kid to read it and understand it,
because you could see the words.
Yes, and I would
read mentally it. and see the words, not like as you're reading it, mm-hmm. but you can see yourself swinging. You know, as he's describing it to yep. you.
I would read that book in my bed and play catch to myself up in the, you know, throwing the ball up to myself, and then you daydream and hit yourself.
Mm-hmm. That's how I worked on framing. Yeah. Lay in the bed.
Yep. But yeah, that was cool. That was kind of my thing. But yeah, cool, man. That was just thinking about that, man. Bringing back a lot of good memories. How simple life was. All I worried about was, you know, what I was going to wear to school the next day and play baseball.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. That was,
I wish life was that easy, but now I'm passing it on to my guys, my kids. So
I always look forward to game day. Mm-hmm. I was always nervous. I'd sleep with my catcher's glove when I was in high school. I'd sleep with my catcher's glove or my bat.
Do you still sleep your catcher's glove?
No, not anymore. I've lost that love. I sleep with other things now.
Except for in Arizona.
No, that was my, you know, one of my rituals, superstitions. I'd sleep in my glove just to be close to it. And just think, I'm still a visualizer. I know the team that you're going to play. Mm-hmm. I know who's pitching the day before. I kind of how I want to call the game. Just, you know, I always went at it that if I already thought about the play and then it happens, I've already seen it happen. Mm-hmm. So now I just got to slow down. Make the plays that need to be played, but I've already visualized what's happening. The night before, I visualized the entire game.
It's a real cool feeling when you visualize the night before and then you get that hit and it's some deja vu almost, you know, because mm-hmm. you did that and you over and over and over and you're visualizing, then it happens, then you're like, okay, I can do this again because you visualize so much that it becomes almost like clockwork. You know, and that's why, like, I'll call you the day before a game, like, who's pitching for them? Because I have a mental picture of what mm-hmm. they look like. Oh, Lance is pitching. Okay. Lance usually pitches me away, then works me in, throw something I chase at. Then I got that sequence. I'm working yep. on different sequences because, you know, I've faced them before, but I'm visualizing different situations.
Well, you brought up the name Lance and already my mind just went right to him mm-hmm. getting a sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Taking the step back, getting ready, coming to his balance point yep, where he's throwing from. It doesn't matter what the pitch is.
He has different approaches too. You know, he has a long wind up, then he has mm-hmm. a quick wind up, then he has a long stride, then a quick stride. And he has a pickoff move that I don't want to talk about because good things going. Stirring the pot a little bit.
Oh, no, he knows.
He can't get me because I've been there, buddy. I know what's up. but yeah, that visualizing is huge for baseball, for especially you kids out there. You know, it's not just, you know, it's success right there. You're visualizing success, and that leads into life too.
Yep.
Because if you can visualize it, you can do it. And that's one thing I've heard forever. And that's true. If you can visualize yourself doing something, you probably can do it.
Yep.
You know?
Because you've already gone over the different things that can happen
mm-hmm.
in that situation.
I visualize
trying
myself.
To get kids to understand, you know, just in the simplicity of the game of baseball, trying to get them to understand. I've got a ground ball coming to me. There's a runner at first base. I want you to visualize what your options are. Mm-hmm. And a lot of kids can't do it.
Yeah. I visualize myself trying to snowboard and I just can't do it. I keep on falling.
Not this fat kid.
Nope. I'll see you in the cabin next to the fire.
I'm on the grill barbecuing something. You guys go have fun skiing.
Yeah.
Well, sir, I think we've reached that time of the show where
it's always good talking baseball with you, man. You know, we can do this for hours.
Yeah.
We've done it. And, you know, this probably isn't going to be our last baseball chat. You know, maybe the next show is about baseball and something else, but it's always going to, that's what we do here. That's what we do on our Hawkcast one. And looking forward to the future, man. And
we're getting close that yes, date to get I into know, the studio.
Man. I know. And
Speak Spokane. Shout out to them for bringing us on.
Absolutely.
You can find them on Facebook, Instagram, anchor.fm. They have a podcast. It's called Speak Spokane. And you know, huge shout out to all those guys. I don't know all of their names yet, but we will. I believe James was the audio
producer.
Matt was the guy that introduced us mm-hmm. to the studio. And they've got a whole crew of people that are there, some behind the scenes, some that are there right in front, but it's
going to be nice for you to just go and relax and do the podcast and not mm-hmm. have to worry about editing.
Where's my edit? Where's my break? Mm-hmm. How long do I got? What's the sequence?
And the outcome is kind of scary, you know, cause I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe, you know, are they going to make us sound different? I don't know.
I think they'll make us sound clearer.
I know, but the thing that the brain is turning and I keep on thinking like,
you're going to have Kermit the Frog voice.
I hope not, but are they going to give us that radio voice,
you know,
if you're real nice and close to the mic.
Well, if it leads to other gigs, then change my voice to radio voice. Yeah. I'm down.
And who knows? Maybe they'll ask us to talk about other things, you know, and we have to quit our daily jobs. And
now we're back into that goals. Goals
if,
conversation.
If I can get paid enough to talk sports,
I'm down.
Yep.
So without further ado, you can end the show any way you want to.
Well, with the next show in mind, I'm going to say go Cubbies.
Go Cubbies.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
The Hawkcast One Radio Podcast is proud to announce our family joining with Speak Spokane Studios. Check them out at speakstudios.com or go through the Hawkcast One Facebook page and you will find the link to Speak Studios and Speak Spokane. Also, the Hawkcast One Radio Podcast, we would like to thank you for following along, listening to the shows. We ask that you download the shows and follow along with your podcast hub to get the notifications that we have published a new show. So please download and follow along, and please comment on our Facebook pages.